have you had one of those moments since this pandemic started when you just suddenly felt sad or you suddenly felt the weight of it all? I remember covering one of Governor Baker's press conferences in the spring, and it was the first time he referred to masks as something that we're going to become the new normal. And I remember in that moment, I was just hit by how much of our daily way of life we were in the process of losing. And that was way of life. You may have experienced massive loss, like someone you love. This week, the U.S. death toll from the virus passed 250,000 people. In Massachusetts, we've lost more than 10,000 of our friends, our neighbors, our family. Sometimes we know we're grieving and sometimes we don't. Claire Willis says grief varies widely by person. Best is how we handle it, how long we're in its grasp. She's a clinical social worker and the co-founder of the Boston nonprofit Facing Cancer Together. Claire also regularly leads bereavement and support groups. She's got a new book with co-author Maureen Crawford Samuelson. It's called Opening to Grief, Finding Your Way from Loss to Peace. Claire, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
And listener, Claire has said she'll take your calls. If you have questions on coping with grief or a story you need to share with her, 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Claire, I'm thinking about this 250,000 number. We were talking about it as a team this morning. How do you even get your head around that? How do you grieve? I mean, more than the deaths in Vietnam, World War I, how do we collectively get our heads around that size of loss and process it?
I'm not sure that we actually do. I think we access it depending on how the face of it comes into our life, because each of us is impacted very differently by it. But the enormity of it is pretty hard to take in all at once. I think, you know, sometimes in a conversation I'm having with someone, I'll say, well, the traffic at Thanksgiving, and then I realize there's probably not going to be traffic at Thanksgiving. Or I hope to see you, and then I forget for a moment. It's very hard to take in the enormity. This thing has tendrils that just go forever in our lives and touch so many parts.
Yeah, I talked at the top about that moment that I still remember so vividly from one of the press conferences with Governor Baker. And again, I think for me that was a moment of small loss, but grief. People have had small losses. They've had big losses. You write about the fact that people have lost sort of a sense of security, daily routine. And I know we're familiar in our culture with processing the big losses, but how do we have a mechanism for recognizing and dealing with and honoring what we're feeling about the smaller ones?
Well, you know, it's really interesting that you ask me that, because grief, I think often people think of grief as sadness and sorrow. But grief really has as many faces as there are people who are grieving. So it often shows up as impatience, irritability. Anxiety is another big expression of grief. Anger and rage, which we can often see in politically, certainly we can see that. Gratitude and sometimes even relief are all expressions of grief. So it has, people don't always recognize that they're grieving because they think of it in smaller terms of just sadness and sorrow. But it really has as many expressions as there are people who are grieving.
I'd like to go to a call, if you don't mind. 1-800-423-8255. We have Lauren on the line from Somerville. Lauren, how are you?
Good. Thank you so much. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Please go ahead.
I'm also studying, you're not studying, I'm studying mental health therapy, and I'm right at the end, and my question is about grieving loss of connection with family members who have very different ideology around politics and COVID, and it's separated us a lot, and it's keeping us apart this holiday season as well.
I'm sorry about that, Lauren. Let's see what Claire has to say.
Oh, that is such a common issue. I can't tell you how many times I've heard this question. I mean, one of the things you can do is agree not to talk about politics. I think part of what happens sometimes is that, as I was saying before, that grief has a lot of different presentations, and sometimes people choose the more angry route rather than feel the vulnerability of grief and the sorrow of loss. Trying to find a bridge of commonality One of the things that I often do when I'm in a polarized conversation is I'll say, I'm curious about that. Can you tell me more? Because it cuts down on the reactivity and it helps you as the questioner begin to understand the thinking of the other person. It gets into more of a gray, nuanced zone. Do you know what I'm saying?
I'm not sure we still have the caller, but I will say on her behalf, what you're saying does make sense, Claire. And we'll bring another caller in just a minute. I'm going to take a second, though, because I'm going to ask you to read a section of the book. And it's from the introduction. It lays out the spectrum of grief that we might be talking about. You wrote the book in May this year. This is from then. Why don't you go ahead?
We feel the loss of family members, friends and neighbors we loved, celebrities and public figures we followed. We're missing the person we were and the way we lived not long ago. In the midst of this invisible, highly contagious virus, we grieve the loss of a kind of innocence. As we don our masks and gloves, we fear being infected or infecting others and wonder what impact these changes will have on our worldview and our emotional well-being. I'd like to just add here that David Brooks, in a column in the New York Times last April, just at the very beginning of this pandemic, wrote his readers and asking how they were faring. And he got 5,000 replies within a few days. And one of the things he wrote in the column, and I love what he wrote, he said, there's a river of woe, a river of grief running through the culture. And I think that pretty much describes the way its tendrils have reached all of us.
Claire, I'm going to go back to the phones because we have people who'd like to talk to you. 1-800-423-8255. We have another Claire, actually, from Essex. Claire from Essex, you are on with Claire Willis.
Thank you. I just wanted to know if you had any advice for how I can help my father come to terms. He's 90 years old. He's a cancer patient, and he's a widower. And he spends every holiday with me and my husband and four kids, and I can't pick him up this Thanksgiving to come spend it with us. And he's sad and he's lonely, and I wondered if you had any tips of how I could help him through this.
Is he able to use Zoom at all?
He's very good with technology. We do FaceTime him quite a bit.
You know, I think one of the things that I've seen in my bereavement groups is that when people have something in handwriting from someone they love, it helps keep the connection going because so much of our correspondence today is text and email and electronic. And I wonder about writing him a note so that on Thanksgiving he has something from you and from other members of the family. And certainly, as always, a phone call or a Zoom connection so he can see you is important if he's savvy in that way.
Thank you for that, Claire. And Claire from Essex will be thinking about you and your family. I gotta believe that's hard, and I'm sorry about it. So Claire Willis, before we go to another call, one of the things that really struck me in reading your book was this idea that anger is grief. Well, not all anger is grief, but that anger can be a manifestation of grief, and that what we've come to know as these stages of grief aren't really stages. They're things that can rack and stack and overlap each other. Can you talk a little more about that?
Yeah, I think anger is a very common expression of grief because it gives people a sense of agency. And if we're feeling sad or sorrow in that expression of grief, there's a sense of vulnerability and helplessness that we often feel. And I think that can be very uncomfortable for many people to feel that kind of helplessness. So anger is a way that it often expresses itself. I want to just say one thing about the stages of grief, because the understanding in our culture that these are stages that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross wrote for people who were grieving isn't actually accurate. They were written for people who were dying. And they got applied to people who were grieving. And one of the things that's happened is people have compared themselves to those stages and end up feeling like they're falling short of how their grief is supposed to look. So grief is never a linear progression. It doesn't go from A to Z. It's much more like a ball of yarn that's knotted up, and we have to untangle it. So it's important to not try and use or overlay a model of grief on your grief, because everybody's grief looks different.
I'd like to go back to the phones, 1-800-423-8255, to talk about grief with Claire Willis. We have Mary on the phone from Andover. Mary, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My five siblings and I were dealing with grief before the pandemic started, given that we lost both our parents in an 11-month span of time. And unfortunately, I had to quarantine when my mom's anniversary came by, and I just felt so alone and so sad, depressed. And I reached out to my friends. I posted something on social media, and they rallied, and they dropped things off at my house. They sent me messages. So I guess what I want to say is that you don't have to be alone in this. Reach out to your friends. Reach out to your family who can interact with you, because it's good for you, but it's also good for them. Having that opportunity to do something for others in this situation really boosts people up. So I just wanted to share that with everyone. Hopefully it helps.
Thank you so much, because I think one of the things that we've learned is that when we reach out and we're generous with another, it helps our grief as well as their grief. So in doing little random acts of kindness, it's one way to work with our grief that's really helpful. So thank you. That's a wonderful idea.
Claire, several thoughts crashed into my head at once there. One of the things that your book, Opening to Grief, does is offer people some techniques and some things they can do to begin to, as you say, open themselves to their grief, go ahead and experience it so that it can sort of run its way through. We are entering a time when we know a lot of people grieve anyway around the holidays, just as we heard from Mary. What's one thing you might tell listeners, a practice or a habit that might help them address their grief or sit with their grief as they're having it?
I think the first chapter in the book is called Starting with Kindness. And I think being kind to ourselves and not allowing any internal voices that tell us how this is supposed to look dictate how we feel about our grief, and to treat it as we would a tender friend or a child that was hurting, to stay gentle and kind with however it is we're feeling, and not overlay any of the models of grief or anything that we read about what it should look like on ourselves. That's I think that's the most important thing to start with, just to counter some of the prevailing myths. Most of us have ideas about grief and what it should look like, and we might be under the oppression of some of those concepts. The second thing I would say, and it may sound a little bit counterintuitive, but one of the ways we can build resilience in the face of grief is to try to notice three or four things each day that are right for which we can be grateful, because our minds are hardwired to notice what's wrong. And if we can hold what's right next to and in equal proportion to what's wrong, it can be very helpful in creating some inner strength and building our resilience to hold our suffering. So one of the things that I often suggest people do is to keep a gratitude journal at the end of the day, because when you commit to that, the next day you start to look for things that are right. And we're not talking about doing this at the expense of what's wrong, but holding what's right alongside.
I think we have time for one more call. Alex is on the line from Belmont. Alex, go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I have a question. As a parent, I have five children, and there's obviously a lot of loss for them. Particularly, I have a senior in high school and a sophomore in high school. So I just want to wonder if you have any suggestions for how to help them with what they're missing out on.
Claire. Oh, boy. You know, I have to say, honestly, I don't have a lot of experience working with kids. I don't know how to answer that question, and I wish I could do better. I don't know what to say to that.
Well, Alex, let me just say to you, I have one that graduated senior year at the start of the pandemic and a sophomore now. And with both of them, one of the things that I'm groping my way through is just making sure that they can express themselves when they are feeling grief.
Yes.
Because they get embarrassed about it. And I can be someone that they can tell how they're feeling. And Claire, you talk about that communication in your book.
Yeah, you know, actually, now that you say that, I'm just thinking, too, I think journaling these times can be very important. I think having a record of these times for these kids will be important, and writing their feelings out. There's a lot of research that that is emerging about the benefits of journal writing, and that's one thing I would encourage them to do as a form of expression if they're not as verbal or not wanting to talk about their feelings. That's certainly something that would be helpful.
And when you help people get started on journaling, Claire, how do you know? Maybe I'm projecting, but there are many things I intend to start doing, but then don't. How do you help people get over the hump, whether it's a young person or somebody in one of your bereavement groups? How do you help them get over that hurdle and actually start the practice?
I try and do it with very simple exercises. So one of the things that I frequently do with people in my bereavement groups is I'll ask them, they'll say, there are so many things I don't want to ever forget. So I'll say, just write a sentence, I remember, and see where it goes. And then write another phrase, I remember, and just keep writing that stem. And when we set aside the time to remember, we often remember things we didn't know we would ever remember. And so that becomes a discipline and a practice in itself. Another thing to do, I often hear people talking about, is that they write letters to their loved ones who have died. At the end of the day, they might write a letter saying, what I wanted you to know today. And that's a way that they can feel connected to the person that they've loved. And that's a lot of people in my bereavement groups have done that.
Claire Willis, you've been so helpful today. I'd love to have you back again another time. That's Claire Willis, a clinical social worker, who her book, co-written with Maureen Crawford Samuelson, is Opening to Grief, Finding Your Way from Loss to Peace. Thank you.
Thank you.